Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I don't have the logo here because I'm on the road, but we're doing this because it's All-Star break. Luke Jones, I used to be in like Denver for this for like 3 days with gummies and stuff and mountains and crazy stuff, but a couple decent days for Oriole baseball. I mean, we crushed them for being at the bottom of everything, right? At least on Monday night, the little orange bird was at the top of the of everyone's heart and their mind for what Trey Mancini's gone through, and certainly a nice showing for him. And hey, Cedric Mullins touched home plate in the American League victory, right?
There you go. I mean, you have a season that has had so few bright spots, and I mean, it's just been absolutely miserable, especially
John
since
Means. There was
yeah.
John Means.
I was just going to say, since then, there's been next to nothing. I mean, certainly from a team standpoint, nothing to.
If I could tell you, you could have a no hitter and nothing else. Would that be good enough?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what it's become. If you look at their record since May 5th, but you're right. I mean, for two nights in Denver. When you look at what Trey Mancini did on Monday night and what was, I think, a really fun, entertaining, energetic home run derby. I mean, so much it was centered around Shohei Ohtani and what he's meant to the game this year and how he, you know, despite what Stephen A. Smith might say, is becoming the face of baseball just because we haven't seen anything like this in a century at the major league level. But Trey Mancini, he won the night. Pete Alonso, as I tweeted at WNST, Pete Alonso won the home run derby, but Trey Mancini won the night, and he deserved
it
that.
It feels like Trey Mancini won the derby, though.
Yeah, it does. It does. And it almost reminds me, what was it, years ago when Josh Hamilton went nuts at Yankee Stadium, and I think Justin Morneau actually won the derby, but that was the year that Hamilton was insane.
Like, and you know the reason for that? It's because he did my show in the pregame that night from Yankee Stadium.
There you go. But it was just... Monday night was such a good night for Trey Mancini. I mean, we all know his story so well here now here in Baltimore. And I know, you know, there have been great stories, great additions to the narrative that we've even seen in recent days. But what's been interesting is I feel like you and I haven't talked a whole lot about Trey Mancini because he's looked like the pre-cancer Trey Mancini up there. And that's just such a testament to him. And it's something that shouldn't be taken for granted. It's something that should be celebrated. So for him to have that national spotlight, even though he wasn't on the All-Star team itself, for him to have that spotlight and to perform the way he did, I mean, that was pretty special. And again, I mean, the home run derby has changed a lot. The timing of it's a faster pace now with the timing, and the home runs are just going out like crazy. And I think ESPN kind of struggles with how to produce an event like that, but I think it was fun though, and I think certainly it was a great celebration for Trey Mancini to get the kind of recognition that he did. As much as there was focus on Ohtani, and he had the great showdown with Soto, with the, you know, they go to the sudden death, and I guess with the three pitch, home run off, whatever you wanted to call it, so there were a lot of other big names in this, but Trey Mancini, just as he has typically done in his Orioles career, albeit not playing for good teams, he just went about his business and he performed at a really high level. And that was just so great to see. And then you follow that up with Cedric Mullins, who didn't do anything special in the All-Star game itself. But I know at one point, I can't remember if it was his first or second at bat, Joe Buck made mention about how great Cedric Mullins has been this year. And when you look at his season in its totality, and we've talked about it a lot, but when you look at it now, being at the All-Star break, leads the American League in hits. We know he's a Gold Glove caliber center fielder, so you're at a premium position, so you're talking about great defensive value there. Has an OPS over 900. He has a great chance to be a 20-20, you know, if not a guy who pushes to maybe have an outside chance of being a 30-30 kind of guy. If he were playing on a contender, we'd be talking about this guy not in the same way that you talk Ohtani, who, barring an injury, is going to run away with the MVP. And certainly Vlad Jr. did what he did on Tuesday night. But you'd be talking about Cedric Mullins kind of in that, at least that top five, top six MVP conversation. That's how good he's been.
By the way, I'm going to give you a comparison that I thought about. And look, I've watched that kid bat for a couple of years now, right? When it looked like he wasn't going to make it, then he might make it. Then who is he? He's gone. He's a prospect. He's a suspect. Now he's an all-star. Literally, right? He went from prospect to suspect to All-Star. That's literally has been his journey. I saw Kenny Lofton in some way.
Yeah.
And maybe that takes me back to the 1990s and the All-Star game in Coors Field that I went out there. By the way, I've got a great story about calling Coors Field Pissy Water Stadium that wound up becoming something that like foundationally changed WNST and funded a lot of 105.7, quite frankly. But Coors Field in that particular era for me, I remember going to see Tim McGraw and Faith Hill as newlyweds play the Denver Playhouse Theater at the MLB pregame party on ESPN. How old were you in 97? You were a kid, weren't you?
97? I was
98. It was 98.
I was 14 going on 15 in 1998.
Because 98, the reason I know that, 98 was a National League city. 99 was Boston. 97 was Cleveland. So 98 mm-hmm. must have been Denver. I can't remember what I had for lunch today, Luke, but I remember what I did 23 years ago this week in Denver, Colorado. I remember the Beanie Baby they gave me. I remember – do you still see Craig Heist from time to time?
I do.
Remind Craig Heist of the time that he had his first Rocky Mountain Oyster when I had my first Rocky Mountain Oyster. I have pictures. My first Rocky Mountain Oyster, Luke, I know you're having a hard time believing this because you're from a farm up in Pennsylvania. It was my last Rocky Mountain Oyster. I had
shocking.
One, I had one in 1998. I had never had a second one. And Craig Heist was there. It was a part of it.
I'll have to ask him about that. Yeah.
Stuff I remember from 23 years ago when I can't remember what I had for breakfast this morning. I mean, I know maybe grapes and, you know, some blueberries were involved, but it is crazy. And I thought about Dante Bichette. And then I thought, this kid's in the big leagues, isn't he? Yeah, I think so, mm-hmm. right? And I thought about the people I took pictures with in 1998. It is amazing. And the All-Star game hasn't been here yet. And I got a little bit of that the last couple of days. But what an unbelievable thing, right? With Vladimir Guerrero and just if you love baseball and you spent Monday night and Tuesday night, and I fell asleep Tuesday night full of, you know, fourth inning. It's where I go about 9:20 every night. But, you know, it was a nice seller. Other than the jerseys, which were a disgrace.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
Yeah, you can have at that all you want. I don't want to be the bad guy here. But I want to give you some Kenny Lofton on that. Where are you with Kenny Lofton and Cedric Mullins?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty decent comparison there. Now, I think Lofton threw better than what Mullins does. Even though you think of Kenny Lofton as this, you know, he was this wiry guy in center field. You look at him.
He was a basketball player. He was actually one of the guys that was perceived to be a jerk by everybody. He was always very nice to me. Kenny Lofton was cool to me.
But he was the kind of guy who you look at him and he had a long career. I mean, a guy that really played at a high level for a long time, despite not getting, you know, Hall of Fame buzz, anything like that. You know, Hall of good, athlete. Hall of very good, whatever.
He was a real athlete, man.
No question about it. And I mean, you kind of look at where he started his career, where he, you know, he winds up being dealt to Cleveland, and early on there were lots of questions about him, and, you know, maybe not the same path as Cedric Mullins, but it is remarkable. I noted this, and I saw Cedric Mullins even acknowledge this, and the Orioles actually subtweeted something that he posted 2 years ago. Him starting the All-Star game, of course, in place of Mike Trout, but he was very deserving of being a starter. This was not a situation where there was, you know, just, you know, first of all, he deserved to be on the team, and he has arguably, statistically speaking, in 2021, been the best outfielder in the American League if you look at his entire skill set, certainly in center field. But July 11th, 2019 was when the Norfolk Tides transferred him to Double-A Bowie because he was hitting just above the Mendoza line from the time that he was optioned to Triple-A, in late April of 2019. So you think about where this guy has gone over the last 2 years, you know, to a point where new regime comes in, you know, they kind of gave him the benefit of the year of the doubt early on. And then he was off the radar. He didn't even get a September call up despite being on the 40-man roster 2 years ago. I mean, that's how far off the radar he had fallen. And where you consider where he is now, having abandoned switch hitting, having rebuilt his swing, taking that growth mindset that, you know, the Astros and Elias and Mydell have brought here, which clearly hasn't taken to the major league level exactly by and large, But he's certainly one of those stories where you just look at what he's done. It's just been absolutely extraordinary and remarkable. And look, I don't know if what we saw in Cedric Mullins in April, May, and June, and the first part of July is who he's going to continue to be, or if this is his career year. But at the very least, he's answered the question that, hey, he's a legitimate starting center fielder, and he's a legitimate leadoff hitter.
And this is, I don't want to say it's the first time we've like talked about him at length, but the team stinks so much that him getting a hit every three at bats every night and running around, hitting some home runs and losing efforts. They lose two out of three games every night, right? Like literally, you know, they lose four times a week and play six times a week, right? So, and that's gone on for 3 months, and football season, if you can't tell, it's close. I'm growing my hair long for it, just so you know, because I don't have to wear black out there when it's 100 degrees like you. I actually thought about, like, what it would be like to fly to Spartanville, South Carolina in August, and, like, how hot it would be, and I could go see my mom's homeland and see the Gaffney Peach. Things that you may not have experienced on the way to, I don't know, south of the border or someplace like that. But I digress. Back to baseball. There hasn't been a lot of it, right? Like, you and I are waiting for football. You and I are waiting for the Adley Rutschman call or the D.L. Hall call or the Grayson. Blah, blah, blah. Now they're just going to lose a lot the rest of the way, right? And I might go to the Padres Nationals game this week, but they're going to lose a lot the rest of the way. And football's going to start. And then it's just going to be like, I don't know what's going to be a big deal for them in the second. Would it be a big deal if they traded Cedric Mullins for five prospects a week and a half from now? I don't know. That's what he's kind of designed to do, right? Like, if you're going to deal him and you're going to like turn him into something, this is the time to do that, right? Like, stock's never been higher. And then we can talk about Mancini. We can talk about all the rest of it. But like, where's the franchise? Like, it's awesome that it's been a good couple of days. Like, the Mancini thing's amazing, no doubt about it. But a week ago, you and I were talking about what can they get for Trey Mancini. And now all of a sudden, they've marketed this and marketed that. And who's in the pennant race? They're not in the pennant race. I don't know where John Means is. I don't know where D.L. Hall is at this point. I don't know where they are with Rutschman or with Rodriguez. I'm guessing it's not we're going to see them in September. I don't know. You tell me. But then there's the arc of, all right, we spent 20 minutes talking about the All-Star game and Trey Mancini muscling up and like all that. Now what happens to the rest of it?
Well, and I think that's what's interesting over the next 2 weeks. I mean, we're roughly 2 weeks away from the trade deadline at this point. And I mean, you mentioned it. I mean, Trey Mancini's the one that kind of slaps you in the face right now in terms of do you move him or not? We've talked about it. I'm so torn on this. I mean, I feel like 2 or 3 weeks ago we talked about this, and I was probably a little more bullish on saying you deal him. But I just look at where baseball is right now, and I think going into a CBA negotiation makes it even more complicated on this front, not knowing what's going to happen on the other end of that. You know, putting even aside the potential or even likelihood of a work stoppage, just what it's going to look like whenever they do strike a new deal, because they will eventually, whether it costs them 2022 or not, what remains to be seen. But teams just don't trade prospects anymore. And when you look at how Trey Mancini profiles at age 29, you know, he's going to be 30 in March. We've seen here in Baltimore firsthand how first baseman on the wrong side of 30 can age. And it's
already paying, you know, one of them, and the Mets are paying one 20 years later, right?
I mean, not just Chris Davis, but even look at Mark Trumbo, which was, what, 3 years, 37.5? I mean, that wasn't a franchise crippling deal.
And Mark Trumbo, did you just say that?
Yeah, but you know, to me, if there's a scenario, and I'm going to get back to kind of how I feel about this right now, I don't know if the deal that's out there to make it worth trading Trey Mancini is going to come to fruition. I think there are lots of teams that would like to have him, but they're going to look at him and say, well, he's 29 years old. He doesn't play premium defense at a position that isn't premium anyway defensively. You know, where's he going from here? You know, they'll say, hey, he's only under, you know, under club control, one more year of arbitration next year. So that's attractive, but that's not attractive in terms of them giving up, you know, one of the three or four best prospects in their system. You know, I don't think you're getting anywhere close to a top 100 guy in all of baseball for Trey Mancini. So what's your
then
objective
why deal in that?
Right, exactly. And that's the point. So that's where, you know, you kind of come
back. Well, maybe
you
help back. Him out, put him in a better race, right?
Sure, sure. But that to me is where you have the conversation and say, like, look, Trey, we love you. You know, you've been one of the few soldiers, the few pile divers we've had the last few years. But what do you want at this point? Even if you really like what we're doing and you get a sense, you know, behind the scenes and you see what we have in our system and you love the area, you met your girlfriend here who, you know, we know that story. But what do you really want? Do you want to be around here for a couple more years? If that's the case, we can talk a 2-3 year contract. You know, we'll pay you market for what you'd probably get, which, as I mentioned, might be a Mark Trumbo like contract, which was 3 years, 37.5. Because, you know, he's just not the kind of player who I think is going to get, certainly not going to get Chris Davis kind of money out there unless the, you know, the Orioles of a few years ago manifest. But, you know, I think it is one of those deals where, considering where your payroll is right now, you know, I'm certainly not in the business of talking about this organization saving money at this point because their payroll is already bottom five in baseball, which when you're rebuilding, you expect to have a low payroll. So not even going to harp on that too much. But Trey Mancini is the kind of investment, if you want to keep him around, you feel he's a positive influence on your younger players. If you think Rutschman, Grayson Rodriguez, DL Hall are all conceivably in Baltimore next year, which I think is realistic. Certainly Rutschman, and I feel Hall and Rodriguez could both be in Baltimore conceivably
next
year.
Well, how long
have you penalized
these guys for sucking, right?
Well, there's that, but I think if those guys are truly as special as lots of baseball, not just the Orioles, but lots of baseball think they're going to be, this thing could turn the corner. You know, not next year, but the year after that, let's say. And they're in a position where they're, you know, in 2023, they're in the wild card position. Under that scenario, you'd love to have Trey Mancini on your club. So if you're in a position where he's willing to take, you know, a 2-3 year deal, you know, depending on how you do it, do you do it now, buy out his final year of arbitration? Do you just play it out and then you revisit this next year at this time? And if they're losing 100, you know, on pace to lose 110 games again, you deal them and you just say whatever, or you try to re-sign them, whatever. But, you know, it is tough with him because I think there is so much value to having him around as the face of your franchise. Although I think Cedric Mullins could certainly, you know, has elevated his stature in that way. And I think the moment Adley Rutschman gets here, there will be, you know, we saw this with Matt Wieters a decade ago when that happened. But, you know, Trey Mancini has been a good soldier. He's a high character guy from everything we've seen. He's handled himself with such grace. He's always said the right things. You know, if he's in a position where he wants to see this through and loves the area that much, and he actually does believe what they're doing behind the scenes, believe in that, in the way that J.J. Hardy re-upped with the Orioles in 2011, in the way that Adam Jones re-upped in 2012 when everyone didn't think 2012 was real yet.
Yeah, I was going to say Adam Jones is the guy that bought in, right?
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
they could have given him $5 million on the way out to play 2 more years and sell some tickets and he'd still be here. Yeah,
and they could have. Right, right. But at the same time, you also look where Adam Jones is at this point in his career. He's 35 and not even hitting all that high of a level in Japan at this point.
There's so, no question about right. that. But if it's about
yeah. but there is that.
Tickets, it's sure. there's a bridge thing that they
there
have.
Is.
They failed at, right? I mean, the old man didn't know what the F he was doing. Yeah. But like giving Davis money, but like they gave Davis $150 million. They could have given Adam Jones $5 million and accomplished some nice things. And in the case of Mancini, to your point, it's going to be a $50 million investment, kind of, sort of, right?
Yeah, I mean, whether it's 50, whether it's 35, whether it's 40, I mean, it's going to be something, right? I mean, it's going to be something of real consequence. Not that I think it cripples them if Trey Mancini signs a 3-year deal and 2 years into it, you know, kind of looks like, let's say, Mark Trumbo, not Chris Davis, because that's a pretty
two Mark Trumbos. That's two more than we've had here. Well, like,
but I'm
2016.
Just, but isn't that? But think about this though, Nestor. You look at what they did and what they ultimately gave Chris Davis. Remember, Dan Duquette acquired Mark Trumbo thinking he was going to replace Chris Davis, and then of course they paid Chris Davis what they paid him.
When I think Mark Trumbo, I think Dave Kingman.
But the following offseason, and keep in mind, Trumbo hit 47 home runs in 2016. That following off season.
No. Kingman.
But my point is, though, no one else wanted him. So you kind of remember that. And look, I'm not saying Trey Mancini's not the same exact player as Mark Trumbo, and he's not Dave Kingman. I'm not, I'm not trying to be disparaging at all. I'm just saying you don't see teams value those guys like they used to.
And this is the Ray Rice running back situation, right? Like,
sure,
how much you value Ed Reed, the greatest safety of all time. What do you pay him? You know, what do you pay a first baseman who's a nice guy and has a pretty girlfriend and the most amazing story ever? And hats off to Kevin Van Valkenburg and everybody else who, documented that. I know Connolly wrote a great,
And he's a good player. And he's a good player. Let's be clear about that. He's a very good player. But you do look at how he profiles. He's 29. You have to at least acknowledge his history with going through undergoing cancer treatment and all of that. And, that's got to be in the back of your mind, at least. Not to say that you wouldn't pay him or you don't want him on your team, but it's part of his history, right? In the same way that, historically speaking, players of his profile aren't going to age the most gracefully typically. That doesn't mean he's going to be Chris Davis and he's going to be out of baseball in 2 years or anything crazy like that. But you acknowledge all these things. And that's where we come back to, if you're someone that's looking at Trey Mancini, you might say, hey, yeah, I'd give him a 3 or 4 year deal in the open market, but I'm not going to give him the second best prospect in my system right now. To have them for the rest of this year and next year. And that's where the rub is for the Orioles in terms
that's
of
the paying twice part that
exactly.
The new math doesn't work. The MIT
exactly.
Math doesn't work like it did in 1998 with Sid Thrift.
Right. And let's be very clear here. As we're talking about this, and we'll get to, we can touch on Mullins and, John Means looks like he's nearing a return. He's making some rehab starts in the minors, but I think there's questions with him that I think is probably dimmed the likelihood of any serious conversations happening there when you're talking about coming off of a shoulder issue that's put him on the shelf for 5 weeks. But I don't think whatever they would decide here, whether it's to move Trey Mancini, you end up not getting a whole lot of consequence, as far as a return of consequence, whether you hold on to him and you trade him next year as a rental, you're not going to get much there. I think that's pretty evident at this point. You're not seeing teams
trade.
Well,
you also have to ask if he's going to have a better year next year than this
year.
Well,
there's that. And like I said, there's a conversation to be had that if he wants something that is reasonable in terms of length, and again, I'm not saying lowball him, but I don't think any team's given him a 5-year contract. I just don't think a player that fits his profile is getting that in this day and age in baseball with these front offices.
You're talking
being
about
so smart
market contract. You're about the old days where you had to pay the Peter, 20% more just because you suck and you're the Orioles.
Yeah,
this kid doesn't feel that way. And the way that Messina didn't feel that way, and the way that Mike Bordick didn't feel that way, and the way that BJ Searle, I mean, there've been, I can name 10 of them. Adam Jones would have been one of them. Nick Markakis might have been one of them, right? And that's harder for Jones or Markakis because those were life altering. Mm-hmm. Twice what Mancini will get, and maybe somebody's out there with 3 years and 15 for Mancini. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, I think that's likely or very possible.
Well, that's different than 3 years and 38. If
but
you can
I
get
just,
48.
Oh, sure. But
if you
got
to play in Miami to do it, then I don't know.
Right. For me, though, it's much more about the length of the deal. I just don't think that you're going to see a team, whether it's I certainly don't think the Orioles would do it. I don't think you're going to see a team that gives him a 5-year deal. I mean, this isn't a guy who's hit 45 home runs and
he's not a superstar. He's just a superstar of a guy.
Right. He hasn't had a Chris Davis 2013 like season. So that's where we kind of come back to whether you move him, whether you hold on to him and he leaves as a free agent, or even if you re-sign him to, as I suggested, a 3-year deal, let's say. Do I think any of those outcomes drastically alter whether the Mike Elias, Sig Meidel plan works here in Baltimore? Probably not. So that's where I come back to the PR value, the value of your team not having a whole lot of soul right now, for lack of a better term. A whole lot of heart right now. Not that these guys aren't playing hard. They're playing hard. But there's not a whole lot that Orioles fans can identify with right now on the major league roster. You can make an argument Adley Rutschman is that guy down below right now.
By the way, I saw Salvatore Perez taking Ikes at the All-Star game and thought, he used to be a 230 hitter. He used to be the sixth best team on a team that sucked. And things change. And I think that that's where you would talk about Keuchel with the Astros, compare that to Elias and say, all right, that's a John Means. And you talk about things that happened with Houston with Altuve or any of those guys, you'd say, well, maybe that's Mullins. Maybe that's Mancini. Maybe Mancini will be a 33-year-old guy on a team in 2025 that wins 97 games with D.L. Hall as an 18-game winner and Grayson Rodriguez is a 22-game winner and like –
Rutschman MVP candidate,
maybe,
whatever it is.
Yeah, right. Sure. Hitting 318 with 28 bombs and like all that, right?
Right. And that's where, I mean, the most recent comp, and it's a different position, but I mean, look at Ryan Zimmerman in DC for all these years. I mean, you know, he played on a bunch of terrible teams down in Washington and hung around, got to the point where, of course, Bryce Harper was outshining him and Anthony Rendon and of course, Strasburg and Max.
He played for Frank Robinson. Frank's dead.
But, but you know, you look at Zimmerman. Could Trey Mancini conceivably be that guy for the Orioles?
Maybe.
I mean, maybe. I don't think he needs to be from a baseball standpoint.
Dude,
I don't think this is critical.
Again, they'll build a statue for him, right?
I mean, I don't know if they build a statue as much as they just, everyone feels really, really happy for him. And it's just such, you know, in the same way that, you know, you kind of looked at, you know, with the Ravens.
Adam Jones, Nick Markakis.
Well, that, I mean, sure. Or you look at the Ravens.
A statue, but like, and neither did Nelson Cruz or, you know, I mean, you know, Delman Young's the biggest star in the history of Oriole baseball. Ask anybody. Tito Landrum.
Yeah, no question. So again, from a strictly speaking from a baseball standpoint, you know, we're probably spending too much time on Mancini and, you know, Mullins would be the, you know, even though Mullins is under club control for another 4 years after this. So he's the guy you're talking about that if you were going to trade him, you need like multiple top 100 prospects in all of baseball coming back.
Nobody's giving that.
That's what it'd have to be. And again,
on either one of these guys.
Well, I would say this.
They give you that for Rutschman, but they're not giving that for you, these guys.
Right. If you believe Mullins, what he has been in 2021 is him moving forward, and you look at it from a, you know, you look at his advanced statistics and everything, he's the kind of guy that teams are going to pay more for. But to your point, does that mean three top 100 prospects? I'd be surprised. So again, it comes back to what are teams willing to deal, and then what's the upside in doing that? I mean, we've seen the Orioles make a lot of trades the last few years. And you know, I think they've done well in some of those trades, and others they haven't done so well. But are you just going to be getting more bulk, or are you going to be getting something of value? I think you'd certainly, you know, any deal that you would have to consider for Cedric Mullins, you'd be getting a heck of a lot of potential long-term value. I don't know if there's a deal out there that's going to manifest for Trey Mancini in that way whatsoever. So that's where, to me, it's a marginal net gain potentially long-term. But what are you losing from a PR standpoint? And the cynic would say, well, they're not selling many tickets, even with Trey Mancini on the roster. But at some point in time, and we talked about this a little bit with Jonathan Villar a couple winters ago, and, you know, Dylan Bundy or Hanser Alberto, you know, guys that they've either, you know, non-tendered or moved on from. But there does come a point in time where you recognize that there are some levels of this, not just have to make the major league roster as miserable and not enjoyable as possible compared to the opposite end of the spectrum where you're all in trying to win a World Series. There are many degrees in between there that we can talk about.
Number one pick versus trying to get the number eight pick.
Sure.
Right now, they're trying to get the number one pick. So dealing some of these guys off that are good players, you know, I don't think any one player is going to make a difference between them catching Arizona catching them. I don't know. I mean, Arizona at this point believes they're getting the number one pick.
Sure.
And what difference does it make? And we didn't even get into this. When you have the number one pick and you take the fifth best guy.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought that up because I think we'd be remiss without at least mentioning the draft, Colton Cowser, which look, I think if you look at the Orioles drafts the last 3 years now.
O-L-T.
Yeah, can you imagine if the Colts were still here? That would have been such a big deal. Drafted a player named Colton.
Me and the big wheel, man. We did that, you know? And then there's Cole Brennan.
Yeah, no question.
Cole Brennan story. Oof, right? Yeah.
But I think one thing that's very evident, and look, we can get into the whole below slot. I mean, ultimately, we have to see what these guys sign for. There are a couple college players that, you know, guys that have the option of going back to school that might be a little more expensive of a sign than the industry indicates. First of all, I'll say this. You're seeing mock drafts from even some of the most respected sources out there and most plugged in pundits. Lots of volatility, and we're not seeing a whole lot of accuracy. I mean, Henry Davis going first. There weren't many people who thought that was going to happen. I mean, maybe at one point earlier in the summer, and then you saw them kind of go away from that. So we do have to remember these rankings that Baseball America or Keith Law or Jim Callis or whoever it might be, they're not gospel. I mean, they know a lot. They know more about these guys than you or me. Let's be clear about that. But they don't know everything. So maybe the Orioles, and I think this is what's interesting, when you look at their three drafts now under Mike Elias, heavy, heavy, almost overwhelming influence skewed and influenced and really gearing towards college position players, college hitters, where guess what? There's more reliable data on them. So when you talk about their predictive model, which is, you know, they have all this data they take, not just on the players they're evaluating, but past drafts.
That hits at college is the best prospect you can have because his arm doesn't blow out and you know you're getting a hitter, right?
It's like, the highest floor.
Did I just bake it down the best way?
Basically, the highest floor, but the critic would say, might not have the same kind of ceiling as the guy that has a chance to be Manny Machado, who you drafted age 17. So, but we've seen that. It's been really interesting. I mean, they out of 20 rounds in this year's draft, they took one high school player in the eighth round, you know, a catcher who they're going to sign. You know, he's going to forego his college eligibility. So, you know, we'll see how that works. I mean, I think they like the bat a lot. It's also a kid who has a good arm, and you know, other teams even talk to him about pitching, but it's very clear they are very much skewed towards drafting college position players. However, look at their drafts or their trades of the last few years. If you go back to the Dylan Bundy trade where they acquired five pitchers from the Angels, they acquired Kevin Smith from the Mets in the Miguel Miguel Castro deal. They've acquired a lot of pitchers. So you wonder how many of those pitchers they acquired were guys that they liked in their modeling that they didn't draft, but then they saw them for a year in another team system and it verified information. So I don't know. But your point is well taken. And it's something I even noted in my 12 Orioles thoughts at BaltimorePositive.com in talking about Colton Cowser. If we're going to acknowledge that they're at least going to save a little bit of money. And I've seen some people debate whether it's going to be a major underslot or he might actually get more money than you think, and it's only going to be maybe a very modest savings. And then from that standpoint, the theory doesn't hold up quite as well. But I think it is fair when you're talking about a team that, as much as I defended where they were 2 years ago and saying, well, you know, is it really tanking when they went into 2018 trying to win and they lost 115 games? But now when you see where they are now, again, on pace to be well over 100 losses, clearly did not try to upgrade their pitching, clearly did not do anything at second base of note when you non-tendered Hanser Alberto. They're in that tank mode, and we'll call it that. It's, you know, Michael Elias isn't going to say it publicly, but that's what they're doing right now. They're not trying to win at the major league level. They're not trying to maximize wins at the major league level. That's where you do look at it and say, well, do you really need to be the worst team in baseball or the second worst team in baseball? If you are going to end up taking the fifth or sixth best prospect from a consensus standpoint. Now, Colton Cowser might turn out to be the best player in this draft. And if that's the case, then hey, Mike Elias and Mydell will say, well, we knew what we were doing.
We'll evaluate that on a, you know, night in late October at some point, 3-4.
Yeah, I mean, right? That's the thing. We don't know, but that is a fair question that I think fans have at this point where you look at it and say, do they really need to be this bad? And this brings us full circle to, I think Trey Mancini is the most logical guy to point to where you say, you know, you haven't won anything with them the last few years. If you can get them on an extension that makes sense, it's not going to cripple you long term or anything like that. Is it so bad to keep him around for a couple years and mentor your young guys? And hey, if the path back to relevance is a little shorter than it looks right now, which again, I'll remind everyone, 2010 Orioles were the worst team in baseball when they hired Buck Showalter, and they're in the playoffs 2 years later. So you never really know. But
well,
is
White
it really?
Sox. We could go through all of these teams.
Is it really? Are you really in a position where you have to trade Trey Mancini, where you can't re-sign him if he's amenable, you know, cooperative and amenable to a reasonable extension? It might be Trey Mancini, who says all the right things privately. He might be dying to go to a winner. And if that's the case, guess what? You have that conversation. Say, Trey, we'll try to accommodate you. We want to try to get the best deal.
Dude, I think he's
going
to play.
Right. You wouldn't blame him at all. But then if you do that, Mike Golias then can share that with the media and in turn with the fan base to say, hey, we did talk to Trey about an extension. At this point in his career, getting this close to free agency, wanting to win and knowing where we are in our plan to continue to build the talent pipeline in this organization, we just didn't see a fit. So we decided to move on. We got the best deal we could get. If that's the case, no problem then. You wish Trey Mancini well. Maybe he comes back in 3 years when he's a free agent and you need a DH to fill out your lineup. But then I think you can put your head on the pillow as an Orioles fan and feel fine about that. But you know, it is one of those things that I do wonder if the kind of deal that you'd like to say, yeah, you have to make that deal because you're going to get some really good young talent. I don't know if that's going to manifest where you're going to be excited about it, or is it going to be more of, you know, guys that they already have in their system right now. We're okay. They might have an interesting trade or two. Not saying they can't be a major leaguer, but certainly not guys that you're going to be talking about as the three or four best prospects in your system. And if you're not getting that, I don't know if it's really worth it from a PR standpoint to just say, oh, we're going to just get rid of Trey Mancini and, oh, we'll save a little bit of money there. You know, if that's what the rationale is, then shame on the Orioles, because you are talking about a guy that fans have been able to identify with. And look, they still have some people watching the game. So at the very least, reward them. How about that?
We still know the biggest story in the city is Lamar Jackson running around doing 7-on-7 drills on asphalt with...
We're going to fight on this.
...kids in sandals. It's a nice PR story. It's a nice piece of video. It's kind of cool and fun and all that, except he's not a video game. So, and I remember when Mike Flanagan lost a season back in the day. I remember when Terrell Suggs lied and probably still would lie to this day about how he got injured. I don't, every year he does something that's not real smart on video in the offseason.
Were you really,
I don't need to bubble wrap the kid, but like...
Well, that's the thing, though. Anything he does to work out to get ready as a player is going to look more risky than that. I mean, I don't know. Like, maybe we're looking at something different. And I'll hear you on the jumping over the jet ski last year. That come on, Lamar. You know, and I get it. He's 23. He's having fun. You think you're invincible at that age. Seeing him, and he wasn't even running at full speed. I mean, I don't know.
If he falls over and gets hurt in that video, it's...
I mean, but
BFD.
But at the same time, you just said it. You can't put these guys in bubble wrap. I mean, look, if he were jet skiing,
maybe this is just me being a 53-year-old guy. $200 million and realized I just wouldn't.
I just didn't see what he was doing as being all that terrible. I mean,
it wasn't terrible, not for you and me, because we blow our knee out, we go get crutches, and we walk around and laugh about how we're not like young like we used to be.
I think
around with a bunch of like people on the street doing things that you make your living.
First of all, let's be clear. This was
not a guy singing songs on the street. I just don't mess around with that stuff because I've seen mistake. There's only one mistake that could happen. Only one bad thing can happen. I don't know. I got shot at. That's fine. That's Twitter. You know, I mean, that's cool. He's a street guy and he's a guy that people, that's great. As long as he didn't get hurt. And he didn't get hurt. So I don't have anything to complain about, but I hope he's not doing that 3 days a week. That's all I'm saying.
Sure. I mean,
and he wouldn't be doing that Friday night at Glen Burnie High School, running sprints the way Brady Anderson did in front of Hooters 30 years ago. You know what I mean?
But I also, again, though, you just said it, though. These guys have to prepare for the season, too. And anything he's doing from a strenuous workout standpoint probably is a greater risk than, I mean, well, he was running, was he even at 2/3 speed? I just looked at it and
I think he could have signed autographs and taken pictures and selfies with people and been just as good a guy.
I mean, sure.
And I think Eric would have appreciated that.
I'll hear you on that.
I think Dick would appreciate that. I think John would appreciate that. I think Greg Roman would appreciate that. I think James Urban would appreciate that. And I think his teammates who have sense, not the ones that are just going to come out because, the bullshit where you just defend somebody because you wear their color, I don't have any time for that. I don't defend everybody from Dundalk. I don't defend everybody from Baltimore. I don't defend everybody on AM radio. I don't defend everybody with long hair. It's not like – I'm not tribal like that. It's
sure.
Just, I would hope somebody in the organization would sit down with him and say, dude, we love you. You're a great guy. You're great for people. Do anything you want with people. Sign autographs. Be a great guy. Don't go running backwards on video with some hobo who's trying to make an ass of you on video.
You mean kids that he was giving a great experience to at his day down in Florida?
No, I don't think it was like all of that. I think you can give kids a great experience without having to take on a challenge for somebody who's trying to beat you on video in some way. I just don't think it was smart. That's it. I mean, that's me being 52 because, look, my wife does stuff after having cancer that she and I – dispute. My son's 37 and I've disputed for a million years. I lost a finger when I was 3 years old effing around. I'm much more safety first, and that's my nature. And my nature is to be, I'm very liberal, as everyone knows. Ask anyone. But I'm not liberal when it comes to like things that have permanence to them, like blowing an ACL on blacktop for a camera to show you're a good guy. Lamar's a great guy. He doesn't need to do that to be a great guy. That's
fair enough.
That's how I feel about a $200 million investment.
And that's fair. That's fine. I just looked at that as not as being way more benign than how it's being portrayed. And I'm not saying you're
with him. You don't have to be Deion Sanders.
I saw a world-class athlete going at far less than 100%. I mean, people are like, he's on a basketball court. He's not on a skating rink. He's not on an ice skating rink either. I mean, he's not on stilts trying to do this
or something. Yeah, that's all. I mean, I'm serious.
I don't know. I think a lot of this
with him, play scissors, paper, rock, do anything you want, except do something that puts your future and the future of my franchise at risk. That's all.
That's all. I just looked at that as not being nearly as strenuous and risky as some people. And look,
I just saw him backing up and cutting. That's all on asphalt.
But I don't care
who he's doing it with, why he's doing it, what kid he's making happy, what kid he's cancer he's curing. I just didn't think it was smart. That's all.
I don't know. How's that any different than? And Steve Bisciotti said this many years ago about Terrell Suggs, and of course the dispute was basketball as opposed to him claiming he was taking a conditioning test.
That was Steve Bisciotti saying something at a press conference he doesn't even believe.
For years we said Steve Bisciotti told the truth. So what, now we say he does it? I don't know. I mean, I go back to Steve Bisciotti saying at some point in time, these guys aren't in bubble wrap. They have to get ready for the season.
Don't be stupid.
I just don't see it was as being that.
I don't know, man. Like the Robert Edwards, sandbox thing in Hawaii
playing beach football barefooted in the sand is, I think, a way more risky proposition than Lamar Jackson at way less than
taking on some kid that's trying to embarrass you on tape, moving backwards on asphalt.
I don't,
for no good reason.
I think you're looking at this like it's something way riskier than it was.
I honestly hope he only did it with one guy and didn't do it with 12 of them.
No, he did it with multiple kids.
Okay, it's even worse. So that's fair. That's touching the stove time. I don't know. We can go back and forth. Luke Jones, Baltimore Luke, you can go argue with him out on Twitter. You can argue with the old guy at Nestor Aparicio or at the WNST. I don't know, man. Age and wisdom. You and I, we're going to go back and forth all summer on this, aren't we? Are you broiled because you're trying to lose weight or fried because you're daring?
Oh, I like either one. But to go back to this and finish our point on this, because we've already given it way too much oxygen at this point.
Agreed.
In the grand scheme of things, it's really not that big of a deal.
He didn't get hurt.
Didn't get hurt. Exactly. But a lot of this is also nothing is going on in the NFL right now. I mean, Mike Florio did not write this piece if it were, you know, the middle of training camp and it surfaced from 7 weeks
because
earlier.
It would never happen at Glen Burnie High School on a Friday night because the Ravens would lose their friggin' minds. They would. They would.
I don't think they lost their minds over it. I'll say this. Yeah.
The next
time
they lose their mind.
I don't put this even in the same vicinity as jumping over the jet ski last year.
I love the kid. I just don't. But this is 3 for 3, 120 miles an hour on the road.
This is not even close to
this
those.
This wasn't
other
a good decision.
There's
no decision where you go up to Lamar and Chad Steele standing there and saying, "Hey, Chad, I'm going to go run backwards with these guys on asphalt." Chad Steele would say, "Your asses. There's no way that's coming back on Ravens.com video from my boss. That ain't happening."
It's amazing that it's amazing that basketball players can function on a basketball court because it's so incredibly dangerous as you're making it out to be.
Luke Jones will be at the ballpark. He'll be eating hot dogs. He'll be not in Carolina or Spartanburg, but the Ravens will be beginning and we'll be arguing. This is why it's fun. You know, they told me when I bought the AM radio license that I should have conflict here. So we have real conflict here. How does it feel?
We didn't even argue that much about the Orioles, which is this is usually the opposite, right? So
they haven't played in 5 days.
Yeah, I mean,
Jones here. He is Baltimore Luke. I am nasty at WNST.net. You can find us both at Baltimore Positive, making the most of the slowest week of the year. Just to prove how slow it is, it's All-Star Week. We are WNST AM 1570 and Baltimore Positive.